On today's episode of Good Word, Jared Greenberg joins me to discuss Game 5 of the NBA Finals and what we've seen so far. Is officiating a real concern or a made-up social media construct? The Memphis Grizzlies made a groundbreaking trade with the Orlando Magic. What does that mean for Ja Morant and Kevin Durant and his future? He selected three teams where he wants to go. What does that actually mean? And Jared Greenberg has a rant for the ages about the upcoming NBA draft. All that and much more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. A bit of business before we get into today's show. We are, of course, on YouTube, so don't forget to rate, review, subscribe to us there, as well as all the places you consume your audio podcast. Today, we are joined by my man, Jared Scott Greenberg of Turner Sports, of NBA TV. How you doing, Jared?
Full government name, huh?
You thought I forgot.
There's a lot that you tend to forget when we have conversations, so I wasn't sure that you could remember that one. Thanks for wishing me a happy Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to all those dads out there that got themselves a relaxing Sunday yesterday.
Because we didn't get a game yesterday.
That's right.
For some reason, we did not get a game on a Sunday, which is supposed to be prime viewing time, but that's just the way that the schedule worked when you want to go 2-2-1-1-1 instead of 2-3-2, bring back to 2-3-2. That's a conversation for another day that apparently we will never have because anybody I ask says the 2-3-2 is never coming back. Jared, since today is Monday and game five is today, we're only going to get into a little bit of the game. But there is some interesting things that we can talk about in the aftermath of game four of the NBA Finals. The series is tied 2-2. I thought the Pacers blew their chance, the strongest chance at winning the series. Do you look at this series as being permanently shifted by this point, by the last 5 minutes of that fourth quarter that we all saw in Indy?
I mean, the simple answer and the obvious answer seems like it should be yes. But if there's one team that's kind of bucked the trends of everything we've come to know about the playoffs and the recent history, it's the Indiana Pacers. So if there's one team that I give a chance to, because they're already 7-3 on the road, they've already won in this building in Oklahoma City, and they seem to pull stuff out of their hat on a regular basis. With that said, I wouldn't pick them. Don't feel like you can absolutely count them out because of some of the magic that they've had so far this postseason. But with this being a best of three and OKC having two games on the road, and I think they're their way more talented team, and I think they figured some things out, particularly on the offensive end in game four, I do think that this is OKC's series to win now.
Well, I look at it a multitude of ways. One, I tend to agree with you that you can never really count out the Pacers at this point. I think do that at your own peril. They don't seem to realize that they blew the series, Jared. Like from being around them the other day at practice, they didn't seem to walk around like a dejected team that says, you know what, we screwed ourselves. Look, they're like, okay, we're going to have to win another game on the road. And generally, if you are the underdog in this NBA Finals, this 2-2-1-1-1 situation, 9 times out of 10, you're going to drop a game at home, which means you're going to have to win two games on the road anyway. Usually, to me, that's what happens. You wind up winning two games on the road at some point throughout the series, as long as it does not get to a game seven in the NBA Finals, which we know is all very rare for a road team to win a winner-take-all game seven in the Finals, 2016 being the notable example. 2016 was an anomaly in a bunch of different ways, Cavs and Warriors. But shifting this a little bit, Jared, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, he needed a classic fourth quarter. And I'm going to toot my own horn here, Jared. I predicted that he was going to have a Steph 2022 finals game against the Boston Celtics, a Dirk Nowitzki 2011 finals game, the flu game for Dirk, the Giannis game where he had the greatest defensive play we've ever seen in the NBA Finals. Shai put his stamp on this series in the last 5 minutes with 15 points. Do you think they have figured something out with, hey, you know what, Jalen Williams, you can run the point, and Shea, you can play off the ball, and that way you don't gum up our offense early in the games, and then you have enough strength to finish the games, because he looked gassed in game three, and he did not look as gassed in game four.
No question. And it wasn't just, Vinny, the fact that they put Jalen Williams on the ball or Alex Caruso on the ball and SGA off the ball. They totally shifted his rotation minutes, right? Shea usually plays the entire first quarter. He came out halfway through. And an important stretch in this game was the beginning of the second quarter when Halliburton was off the court, his normal rest time, and SGA was on the court. And they played SGA three less minutes in the first half. And listen, 3 minutes, you could say, what is 3 minutes? Well, they feel like they have a formula. They feel like they have a sense knowing what's important for them. And SGA was able to play more minutes in the second half because of that. I was actually surprised he didn't play all 12 minutes in the fourth quarter. But clearly, there's, whether it's a fatigue factor, an endurance factor, however you want to state it, they don't feel comfortable playing him the entire fourth quarter. But I think they did all that. And then, to me, something that, you know, I was a part of the NBA TV broadcast that Charles Barkley, Grant Hill, and Candace Parker were harping on for a long time. Not only did Mark Daigneault go back to his double big lineup to start the game, but for the first time this series, we saw both Chet Holmgren and Isaiah Hartenstein play together in the fourth quarter. Right. So we had seen a sprinkling of the double big in games two and three, but we had not seen them play together in the fourth quarter at all until game four. And listen, I just don't get it. And listen, I'm not like the X's and O's expert, but we saw this the entire postseason where like Brooke Lopez from Milwaukee was taken off the court. Cleveland was hesitant to go with their double big lineup. Jared Allen often came out of the game and just left Evan Mobley on the court. The Knicks didn't love having Mitchell Robinson and Karl Anthony Towns. And listen, all three of those teams have different reasons for it. But like, to me, go with what brought you to the dance. And it just is shocking to me that OKC is unwilling, or at least has been unwilling, to impose their size advantage on this Indiana team. And I just would like to see a little more of that.
Well, you know, part of the reason is you go back to the double big and you eliminate a big part of your three-point shooting because the spacing gets a lot more gummed up. I think they only took 13 threes in game four and won the game anyway, right? Right? So I know they're not the Boston Celtics. They're not trying to get up 60 threes a game. They're not trying to get up 50 threes a game. But I think they do want to take a healthy amount. There is one way that the Pacers have kind of found a way. When you find a way to limit someone's three-point shooting attempts in today's NBA, and you limit that three-point shooting to Lu Dort, who I never pictured Lu Dort as a three-point shooter, but he's shooting 61% from three right now. Maybe that continues throughout the course of the series. But if he's your one sniper, all right, cool. Those are the terms that I am willing to lose to you on, because I'm not willing to lose to you with a strong diet of J-Dub, with a strong diet of SGA threes. I'm willing to, there's some things you just have to accept. When you're playing a team this good at this late in the season, you can't take away everything. You've got to say, you know what, if Lu Dort beats us with hitting some open threes or hitting some threes where we're running at him, cool. That's acceptable terms. One last thing before we get to topic du jour, Jared Greenberg. I feel like this series has taken a more physical tone, a more aggressive tone since the series has gone to Indiana. There was the flagrant fouls, there was the reviews, there was the pushing and shoving. Hey, I like it, Jared. I like the physical tone, but do you think the physical tone favors one team over the other here?
I would say it favors Oklahoma City in terms of their ability to get to the free throw line, their ability to embrace that contact and make their free throws at a very high clip. I think when you think maybe on the surface level of like who's about that business a little bit more, maybe that's the Nesmiths, the Nemhards, Those type of guys. I don't know. I honestly, I'm not reading into it too much. I just think it's a product of a series that's going long and games coming down to the wire.
With that said, Jared, let's move on to the Scott Foster part of the program, because Rick Carlisle brought in the Scott Foster portion of the program when he had an impassioned defense of Scott Foster in his, you know, off day presser. He says, hey, Scott Foster's been an exceptional official for the past 20 something years. You know, the stuff I've seen on the internet, blah, blah, blah. For one, I don't know what Rick Carlisle's doing on the internet. Like, if you're coaching the NBA Finals, you shouldn't be on the Twitterverse. You should not be on the Twitter machine paying attention to what people are saying about Scott Foster. B, if there is a Game 7, I have a strong feeling that Scott Foster will be the lead official, which means Rick Carlisle, I see your game. Always stay recruiting. I got it. I respect it. But do we make too much of the officiating, or is this one of those things, Jared, that because we have it in our heads that, oh, Scott Foster is quote unquote the extender, blah, 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 or maybe Scott Foster has like two or three bad calls that we tend to magnify that? Because I felt like there were maybe a couple of bad calls, there were a couple obvious blatant ones that the refs missed, but I feel like refs missed those throughout the course of the game, period.
Yeah, just to backtrack for a second about Rick Carlisle on the internet, remember, I mean, he's kind of making a thing of it this whole series, right? He did the whole Doris Burke rant.
That's right.
Was that before game one or game two?
Game one.
Now this Scott Foster thing. So he's, whether he's seeking out this information or whether his PR people or other people that are in his inner circle are bringing this to him and he's deciding to make this a big deal, he's using his platform to make statements that are not about necessarily the game, which, good, bad, or indifferent, you know, I have no opinion on. I don't think the referees have had an influence on this series the way others do, right? And like, you know, the conspirators out there that are coming up with, oh, the NBA has an influence. Like, what is in it for the NBA or the referees to have Oklahoma City win a championship or whatever it is? Like what? I just don't see it, right? Like, if the NBA was going to fix it, we would have the Knicks and Lakers playing in the NBA Finals.
Common sense, right?
Yeah.
It's common sense. It's the NBA wants to make sure they have seven games, so we're going to make sure that Indiana doesn't go up 3-1, so we're going to sign Scott Foster here. Like, y'all.
Like, what did the NBA have to do with Ben Mathurin missing three consecutive free throws?
And the two bad fouls.
Right.
No, I think one, Oklahoma City plays a very aggressive style of defense, right? When you have Lu Dort, who plays basketball like a football player plays basketball, there's going to be some people who are looking around and saying, how can he get away with this? And then the second that you breathe on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, then there's a federal crime. I don't think the two things are related, but I understand the correlation that people are trying to draw. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is the MVP. MVPs tend to get benefit of the doubt from officiating. Like it or love it, hate it, whatever it is, that's just what it is. And when you're an all-defense defender like Lu Dort is, and a big and strong guy, I think officials have a hard time of figuring out whether that's big and strong guy being big and strong or big and strong guy bullying someone like a Tyrese Halliburton. And that's kind of the fine line that they have to walk in those situations.
Well, the other fine line that the officials have to balance here is they're now allowed to look at exaggerated movement flopping, right? So like, yes, Lu Dort may extend his arm, but what the referee has to now determine in real time, which they never in prior years didn't have that in their arsenal, was is that extension of the arm or whatever he's doing really the reason why you fell to the ground and then bounced 5 feet, right? And I think the answer a lot of times is no. Like, yes, he touched you, but him touching you is not worthy of you falling to the ground and you know, ending up 10 feet away from him. You know what I mean? So, like, I think that's part of it as well.
No, it's weird because, you know, there's one play that I didn't see in real time, like from where we were sitting on our perch, you know, the vantage point. And Jared, I think you're sitting up there with us too.
You're always on a perch, Vinny, let's be honest.
We're sitting a little bit higher, Jared. We're not sitting courtside. So what I was saying was, from our angle that I didn't see until the morning when I saw a camera angle from courtesy of Twitter, which I give Twitter the credit for pointing this out, when he sent Tyrese Halliburton sprawling out of bounds to get a steal on a dribble handoff, that very much looked like an offensive foul. It looked like a defensive foul that should have been called, but maybe just the refs didn't have the angle. It's plays like that that give fans the pause. But I give refs the grace because sometimes you don't have the angle to see it. And like you said, to your point, you don't know if the contact is exaggerated and the player is trying to sell the contact to get the official's attention and thus not playing strong with the ball. The officials want players to be able to play through contact, especially on stuff, dribble handoffs. You got to be able to be strong with the ball. That's just part of playing basketball. Like, if somebody can knock you off your block, then that's a you problem, not an us problem. So I get that part of it. It's a fascinating but exhausting conversation, to be perfectly honest, Jared. Like, I don't like talking about the officials this time of year because I think, you know, Scott Foster, one of the good ones. Mark Davis, one of the good ones. Zach Zarba, one of the good ones. And every time your team gets a call that goes against them, good, bad, or indifferent, on whether it was actually a good call or not, then like you said, the conspiracy theorists come out saying, why are you against our team? Please. If that was the case, like you said, Jared, we would not have Oklahoma City and the Indiana Pacers in the damn NBA Finals. I'll tell you that much. But when we come back, Jared, we got some real NBA offseason talk to discuss. Back on A Good Word with Jared Greenberg. Jared, the NBA's offseason began officially yesterday, it seems like, because the Orlando Magic decided to take a big swing to pick up Desmond Bane from the Memphis Grizzlies. They trade Cole Anthony, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and four future first-round draft picks, including a draft pick this year, which is slated at 16th, protected draft picks in 28 and 30, and Phoenix's first next season. I feel like Jared Greenberg has a hot take, so I'm just going to let you cook.
I at first was like, listen, okay with giving up KCP and Cole Anthony, and I was like, maybe Memphis starting to rebuild, whatever, but four unprotected first feels like too much. And then I really thought about it. I love this trade for Orlando. I love everything about this. I love when you take into account what Orlando needs, who Desmond Bane is, and the landscape of the Eastern Conference. This is an Orlando Magic team that had not made a trade of any kind in 4 years. 4 freaking years when they traded away Aaron Gordon. They now, after being so conservative, have finally looked inward and identified their biggest problem, which was scoring the basketball. 30th, dead last in the NBA in three-pointers made. Desmond Bane, essentially a 40% three-point shooter. Dead last in the NBA in points per game. Desmond Bane can give you anywhere between 17 and probably 22 points a game. And you may not even need that many with Paolo and Franz, but you've got a guy now that can give you a threat from the outside and complement the rest of your roster, right? Like, there was all of these things out there, like, what should Orlando do? Should they throw themselves in the Kevin Durant sweepstakes? Should they throw themselves in the Giannis sweepstakes? Should they, should they go out and look for a pure point guard, a Trae Young, a Ja Morant? And all of that, yes, those individual players are significantly better basketball players than Desmond Bane. But the Orlando Magic are making a commitment to build around Paolo Banchero, Franz Wagner as the two, and Jalen Suggs as your stopper defensively, who's an above average offensive point guard. Like, to me, this team needed, and that's why they signed KCP last year, and he couldn't deliver for whatever reason, whether Jokic just made him look better than he actually was, or he fell off a cliff, or whatever it was. Giving up these draft picks, who cares if you are now making a commitment to trying to win today? And the final point about it is, the Eastern Conference has never been this wide open.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Boston is not the Goliath we thought it was. Cleveland clearly has vulnerabilities. Who the hell knows what the Knicks are going to look like? Milwaukee, we've got questions if Giannis is even going to be on their roster. Certainly Indiana is a capable threat. But if you feel like you can double down and be better and lean into who you are and your identity, which Orlando has done, give up those picks. Yeah, it may come back and bite you in 5 years, but what if you go to the Eastern Conference Finals next year? What if you're Indiana and you somehow find yourself in the NBA Finals because you've made some adjustments to your roster to build and fill not only your weaknesses, but complement your strengths? I love this deal for Orlando.
No, I like your point, Jared, about the Eastern Conference being wide open. Like, for all the reasons that you stated, if you are a young team that has good young pieces and you can make a way to go for it without severely mortgaging your future, then you go and do it. Like, part of the reason that he went for 4 first-round draft picks is because you had to get off of KCP's money. Like, that's not good money after bad, but that's what the cost is when you have long money and a player who did not fit your objectives. Their biggest problem to me, more than just scoring, because Wagner and Banchero both can get up 20 to 30 every game, 25 to 30 every game. The biggest problem to me is health for that team. Both of those players missed considerable time last year. What? What's the problem?
Their biggest problem is not health. We're not talking about...
Yes, it is.
Well, hold on. That was their problem. They had two players with the freakiest, most unique injuries in the history of basketball. It's never happened. Like, it's happened maybe one time before. It's never happened where two guys in the same year on the same team had that injury. They tore their oblique. It's a freak thing. It's not a hamstring. It's not a calf. It's not an Achilles. It's not an ACL. It's not a chronic ankle injury. It's not a chronic shoulder injury. It's not a back injury. Orlando does not have an injury problem. They last year had freaky injuries that are not going to come back to bite them year after year after year. That's something you look at in the past and say, it's over with. Orlando has good karma's coming their way in the future with these injuries.
Thank you for interrupting me, Jared, because
you're welcome.
I wasn't disagreeing with anything that you were saying. Like, you know, trust me, if you want to do the intro and outro, you're far more better than this than I am. What I was saying was, health was their biggest problem last year. Full stop, right? They're not a 41-41 team as what they look like, as the numbers said they were, right? You just finished there. Desmond Bane has also had his share of injury problems, but he is a great three-point shooter. He's a 41% three-point shooter, whereas your two main scorers are not. They're in the 30s. You'll be lucky if they get to 35, and I'm very curious to see how both of those guys fit together and now have space on the floor with a guard who is, you know, a little more on the compact side. And Orlando was real good at the 6'7 to 6'9 range. Now you have Bane, who's a little more compact. He can still get his off the bounce. I'm very curious to see Desmond Bane as a ball handler with Paolo Banchero as a screener and seeing how they sort of work those actions together. I'm curious how that works. In a general sense, I have no problem with a team that has not gotten out of the first round for God knows how long, and they're saying, you know what? We're going to go for it. This is not the Western Conference where everybody in the West is in an arms race, and you got to make a decision with either you're in or you're out. In the East, it's a little bit different. It's a lot different, like you just said. The more interesting thing to me, and I was making a lot of calls yesterday, sending out a lot of texts to people around the league, and people around the league were asking a lot of the same questions back to me. What does this signal for the Memphis Grizzlies and Ja Morant? Is this the first move in a long-scale rebuild? The feeling is that it's not. The feeling is that, yeah, we can still build around Ja. We can still build around Jaren Jackson Jr. The question, though, I have to you, Jared, do you think that Ja Morant, who has had more availability issues than anything else, we can talk about all the other stuff, but number one problem for Ja Morant, Jared, has been availability, and he has not been as available as you wanted, as you want him to be from a health standpoint. Is he completely off limits in the trade? Or if so, if someone comes to the Memphis Grizzlies with a decent haul, are you seriously considering it? Or are you saying, you know what, let's keep him intact. He's still young. Let's keep him and Jaren Jackson Jr. and figure this thing out.
Yeah, like I would bet that Desmond Bane wasn't necessarily available. And I don't know the details, whether Memphis called Orlando or Orlando called Memphis, but ultimately they got to a place with a deal where they couldn't say no, right? And just one more quick point on the Orlando side of this, and I think it speaks to the Memphis side of it too. Like, I think a lot of casuals out there will say, well, Desmond Bane's not a superstar. Desmond Bane's not an all-star. Well, yeah, if there's anything that people should have learned over the last decade, maybe more, like going back to the Brooklyn Nets acquiring Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, was that just putting together all-stars on a team or Hall of Famers on a team does not guarantee you anything. In fact, the Nets have done it twice. Phoenix has done it. Like all these teams that just try and collect stars, that doesn't win. And what Orlando has done, and not to say that Desmond Bane one day can't become an all-star, but they're putting the pieces of a puzzle together that makes sense. And I think ultimately with Memphis, what they said was, yeah, Desmond Bane's not an all-star and we can part with him because we got so much in return that could help pad for the future, right? And I think the same goes for Ja. Like, I don't think Ja or Jaren Jackson Jr. are untradeable, but that doesn't mean that Zach Kleinman is actively picking up the phone every day calling 29 GMs offering those guys up. I think if somebody has an affinity for Triple J or Ja and wants to give up a package that is now greater than what they got for Desmond Bane, I think you're crazy if you don't entertain that type of deal if you're Memphis. Because in my mind, with Desmond Bane, without Desmond Bane, this group is not a group that, you know, I certainly don't see them in championship contention. And I just don't see them being a team that's anything more than a bottom rung playoff team or a team that's competing for the play-in at the very best.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, Jared, because they won 48 games last year. And for a decent part of the season, they were in serious contention for having home court in the first round. And Minnesota went on a run. Golden State went on a run. Like, all those things just so happened to happen on their watch. And to your job point, if you want to trade for him, he's kind of on an affordable contract. And close your ears and close your eyes when I say this, but just get this out of your mind. He's only averaging about 42 a year for the next three seasons. He's under contract. There's no options. He's under, like, I think it's like 39, 42, 44. That's not that bad when you consider some of the big time, you know, $50+ million contracts for players. But the problem for Ja, again, 9 games the year before, I think he played 60 last year. Availability is going to be the thing. They won 48 games last year with Ja Morant being available for 60 of those games. I can understand how you're looking at it and you're saying, hey, maybe all this draft capital is not to stockpile for the future. Maybe, Jared, all the draft capital is to go and get someone else. Like I think we are getting to the space where draft capital used to be like the most important thing. Everybody was all obsessed with Sam Presti owning every single draft pick and everything else. But sooner or later, you're going to have to pick those players. You've got to pay those players.
Right.
And if you are a team like Memphis and that Phoenix pick next year, first round pick next year is going to look really, really good, I think, given what they are slated to get back in the Kevin Durant deal. We're going to talk about Kevin Durant in the last segment. So I think that might be like a crown jewel of this entire thing, is that one draft pick and the rest is just, hey, this is the price that we had to pay for getting off of Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. I don't think this is the same thing as Mikal Bridges and all those first-round picks. I think this is something a little bit different. And I don't think this sets the market either, Jared. I don't think the summer is going to look around and say, you know what? Desmond Bane is not even an all-star, and he just went for four first-round picks. Kevin Durant better go for five or six. That's not how it works, y'all.
No. Every deal is unique. But I'll say this. You keep on bringing up the Kentavious Caldwell-Pope aspect of this, and I don't disagree with you. The Kentavious Caldwell-Pope getting off his money. I think there's two other important factors that we need to mention this. Number one, Desmond Bane is signed for four more years. Right.
Yes.
So length of a contract that you acquire from the player you're acquiring is significant. Right. They wouldn't have had to pay four first round picks if Desmond Bane had an expiring contract. The other part of it, too, which I think is really, really important, it goes back to my original and biggest point, is that Memphis saw the, I don't want to call it desperation, but the need that Orlando was filling, right? Like, of all the players that we expect to go flying around this offseason, it's clear to me that Orlando looked at Desmond Bane, his profile, who he is, character-wise, basketball-wise, and said, this is the perfect fit for us. And Memphis understood that, right? Like, so there may be a guy who has character flaws, or there may be a guy who's more of a streaky shooter, or more of a guy that has more of an injury history, that maybe on paper you go, oh, it's a great fit. But Memphis looked at Orlando and said, how badly does Desmond Bane fit the profile of what you're looking for? And Orlando came back with the answer, he's exactly what we need. We have identified him as the guy. And he's got 4 years left on his contract.
Right.
It is worth it to us to give up four first-round draft picks.
No, I'm with you. And like you said, the money that he's on, because he's on a rookie scale extension, is not crazy money. 36, 39, 42, 44. Like, it sounds insane. It does. It really does. Like, it sounds insane for me to say, oh, a guy who's never been an all-star making $40 million a year is not so bad. It's not so bad.
But the other part of it, too, and I hate to, you know, advance the story even more, but if to your point, like, maybe then it becomes tradable if you need it. Because remember, they've paid Suggs, they've paid Wagner, they've got to pay Banchero, they've got questions about some other guys, they've got to find a way to offload Jonathan Isaac. They got it. He's making, what, like $19 million or something? Like, yeah. They've got to find a way to get out of that business. But, you know, you can't have four guys, as Minnesota taught us last summer by trading Karl Anthony Towns. You can't have three guys making $50 million a year.
Look, you can only have, I think this is becoming more NFL-like in the way of, you got your quarterback and you got a bunch of other dudes. You got your right. One max player, the one max player that's really the max guy. And then you have to do a really good job of picking players in the draft, and then having value signings across the board.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I want to stay with the Ja Morant thing just for one part of this, because I think he's really an interesting character in all of this. Can Ja Morant, with his availability or lack thereof, with the style that he plays, with the fact that he has not developed into a great or even passable long-range shooter, can Ja Morant be the best player on a team that goes to the Western Conference Finals
today? Absolutely. Yes. Not. Absolutely not. And there's still too much baggage that comes along with him. There's still too much with his father getting kicked out of games as of this past season. Still too much of him having these on-court distractions. Whether you agree or disagree, they've become distractions. On top of the fact, the biggest issue, whether it's the injuries or suspensions, the dude misses too many games. Too many games. So as of today, no. Now, can he grow? Can he mature? Can he make him and the basketball the focal point at some point? Yes, absolutely. But as of today, no.
No, Jared, he doesn't play more than 65 games in the season. If he plays 65 games in the season, that's a good year, and that is the benchmark for how the NBA says you're eligible for the season awards. Right. If that's a good year for him, I don't know how we can look at anything and say, at his age, at the attrition that's going to happen, Let's say that there is a real life knee issue that's going to have to be dealt with in the future for him, considering the boundless way that he plays. And you may have to deal with, you may have to deal with that on the back end, like a Derrick Rose sort of thing. His knee just happened to explode in a way that we haven't seen Ja Morant's knee explode. I wonder if Memphis decides, you know what, we can't do this anymore, or we have to take a step back or a different type of step. I wonder, who is a Ja Morant away from, you know what, we can absorb Ja, we can pay Ja, we can depend on Ja, and we can do big time winning with Ja Morant. There's like one team, legit, that I can think of that I won't say is a Ja Morant away, but can absorb a Ja Morant. The problem is that team is also a Kevin Durant away. It's also insert star here away. You know what that team is, Jared?
I mean, I've got some ideas, but I don't know where you're going with this.
I'm going to the Fighting Emays in Houston. That's the only team that I could say, oh, you know what? They're a Ja Morant away because of their need for scoring as a primary scorer. They need to find the primary scorer at the top of the key who can break down the defense. Ja can do that. I'm not saying that Memphis is shopping Ja.
No.
I'm simply saying that if there is a team that would want to make a move for Ja, and Memphis is not saying, I have not heard this telegraphed, that right, Memphis is trying to get off of Ja. But that's the thing that you say when you want someone to come with their best offer for Ja. So I'm not closing the door on it just yet, because until the draft happens, until free agency happens, I think everybody's open for business at this point, Jared.
Here's the time of the program where I wish your award-winning executive producer, Dakota, would pull a clip from you and I previewing the playoffs and talking about Houston and their first round series and some of the things that I said about Houston, which people gave me some flack about how I was concerned that if Houston had what they deemed to be a disappointing exit from the playoffs, that they would have an overreaction and have a need to bring in a superstar by way of trade. And I kept on getting on social media people saying to me, yeah, but no, they've gone on record saying that they don't want that. Yeah, well, how come we keep hearing the rumors of Kevin Durant and if Giannis is available, that they'd be in that business? Because they feel like they're a star away. And this is, listen, Houston and Orlando are in two different places, but they're not all that dissimilar.
Right.
I think the culture aspect cannot be overlooked. What Ime Udoka did with virtually the same roster a year after it was an absolute dumpster fire in Houston needs to be recognized. And remember, Ime Udoka was the guy who they had the ability to go out and get James Harden. And it was reported widely that he's like, nah, I don't want that dude. For whatever reason, no, it didn't work for us, right? And so for me, I'm not saying that Houston doesn't need to go out and make tweaks. I'm not there saying that they don't need to go find things to complement their guys, but they've got an unbelievably young and talented team. Now, listen, we can have a debate about Jalen Green, and I'm honestly okay if they decide to go in a different direction. But Şengün, Amen Thompson, and then a plethora of other really good pieces, right?
Yep.
I would not go out and force feed a superstar in his mid to late 30s or a guy like Ja, who's all of a sudden going to come in and demand the basketball and the attention and be a risk for our culture to try and win now. I wouldn't do any of that. If I'm Houston, I understand they want to rush this. They want this process to happen, but they are a couple of years away with the growth of these young guys, with adding around the edges to being a team that is consistently contending for Western Conference championships. I would not in a million years bring in Ja Morant. In fact, I wouldn't bring in Kevin Durant or Giannis Antetokounmpo into that mix either, because I think that what this team needs is growth.
I think there's a big difference between bringing in Ja Morant or bringing in Kevin Durant and then bringing in Giannis. Baby, those are three different things, man.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Three different things.
But they're three stars, right? And there's people in that Houston locker room who think that they're a star.
Yes, but Giannis is one of the Giannis Antetokounmpo is one of the three best players in basketball. Let's never forget that. He is 30 years old and one of the three best players in basketball. Just because the Milwaukee Bucks have underwhelmed since winning in 2021, if he somehow decides he wants out, or if you have the stomach to send out your first and the guys that you've cultivated and everything else, and you can still keep Amen Thompson and you can still keep some of those other guys, absolutely not a second thought, Jared. You don't have to do it, but if it comes your way, you better do it.
My concern is the Carmelo Anthony effect, that you have to give so much to get. And I'm not disagreeing with you about anything you're saying about Giannis. Giannis, you know, in a vacuum, you're 100% right. My issue is you're going to have to give up so much of your core roster to get him. Because if I'm Milwaukee, I don't want draft picks for Giannis. I mean, I do. But the Houston is so freaking talented that I want Jalen Green, Alperen Şengün, Jabari Smith. I want Cam Whitmore. I want to take a shot at Reed Shepherd. I want all these guys, right? You're going to give up so much to bring in a guy who now is expected to win immediately, and what's left over in that roster is not ready to win today. They're a year, 2 years, 3 years away, and now you're going to expedite that process while giving away all of your depth and some of your star power to get a guy like Giannis, and that team is now not ready, but Giannis is expected to win. I wouldn't do it if I'm Houston. I wouldn't. I'll give you a team that I would do it for, and this team would shock you. If I'm the Miami Heat, I'd go and take a look at Ja Morant.
Wait. Stop right there, because we are going to talk about the Miami Heat right after this break. It is time for The Last Word with my man, Jared Greenberg. Jared, you brought up the Miami Heat. It is time to talk about the Miami Heat and the Kevin Durant portion of the program. So, KD has listed three teams, according to Shams Charania and also according to The Athletic. Conflicting reports that he wants to play for the Spurs, the Rockets, or the Heat. There, the conflict lies in two different things. A, is KD going to go where he wants to go? Will the Phoenix Suns feel also inclined to send Kevin Durant, who has 1 year left on his contract and wants an extension, which because of KD's age, he can only sign for 2 years past where he is. Will a team be willing to commit to Kevin Durant for max prices? Is Kevin Durant that price you want to pay? And like you just said, if you had your choice between being a Miami Heat and checking on the price of a Kevin Durant, or checking on the price of a Ja Morant, Jared Greenberg, what route are you taking?
Both. I think the Heat need a lot of help. I think the Heat showed a lot last year. Obviously, they had the whole Jimmy Butler saga, which I think had a lot more influence on their issues than anything. But
yeah,
ultimately, we saw a team that is just not good enough. I would check on both. The Heat need a lot. And my point about Ja Morant to the Heat is that, listen, you could talk about, well, if Ja struggled with the nightlife or whatever it was in Memphis, how's he going to handle Miami? Well, maybe it's a little easier in a city that is used to that. And ultimately, I come back to, what does Miami always talk about? Their culture. Heat culture, this and that. They write it on the floor so you can read it in the paint. If you feel that strongly about your culture and your ability to cultivate the right attitude and mentality and approach to every single day, practice, off day, game day, playoffs, then go take a shot at this guy. Go take a shot. Go low ball Memphis and see what you can get.
I don't think I'm breaking news here, but in the middle of the whole Jimmy Butler saga last year, one name that multiple league sources had brought up to me was, hey, you might want to check on Ja Morant in Miami. And I didn't understand like the iterations of it. And I was like, this is going to be a really complicated trade, A, because of Jimmy's extension, B, because of Ja's long money. And there was iterations of Ja and Desmond Bane being shipped out, which sounds like it could be true considering Desmond Bane was just traded yesterday. But for the Kevin Durant portion of this, Khalil Ware, Andrew Wiggins, like that's the starting point for the Miami Heat. And then you maybe you wind up throwing in some picks and everything else, but because Phoenix is a second apron team, it's a lot more difficult to make this trade. If you are able to hold on to Tyler Hero, if that's even your religion, right? Jared, you talked about in the earlier segment the Eastern Conference being wide open. If there's Kevin Durant, if there's Jared Greenberg on the team, you ain't going nowhere.
Nowhere.
But if there's Kevin Durant, you're going Bam Adebayo, and Tyler Hero, no, it's relegation. Right. if your team gets Jared Greenberg on it, you're going to the CBA. Yeah. But if those three guys, if Kevin Durant is your leading scorer at 27 a night, which he can do in his sleep, and Bam Adebayo and Tyler Hero, is that a fifth seed in the Eastern Conference, or are we talking something totally different?
Yeah, I think he could be a five seed. I mean, who are we talking? Regular season next year, what we know about the Eastern Conference right now, right? Say what you want about the playoffs, but Cleveland's going to be there, right? Indiana is going to be there. Orlando is going to be there. Is Detroit? Maybe Detroit's in there.
Yes.
And I would say, you know, the Knicks, obviously. So let's say this. Miami becomes a team that can get into the top six, avoid the play-in. I'll keep it safe there.
Is that enough? Is that enough?
Well, I mean,
you know, like, what I mean, Jared? Is that enough?
Like, here's what I hate about this time of the year and all this stuff is like, well, if you can't win a championship, then why do it at all? Well, because you're getting better, right? Like, Miami is in such a bad spot right now. And let's start with this. Like, Bam Adebayo has got to get better. He's got, no matter what happens with Miami, Bam Adebayo, and I'm sure they would admit this in Miami, he's offensively has to be more consistent and give you more. And I would bet a guy like a Kevin Durant or even a Ja Morant, a true point guard. When's the last time Miami, you know, they've had, you know, Kyle Lowry as a backup. Like, when's the last time they had a true point guard in Miami to help make Bam Adebayo better? I would love to find a guy that could make him better on a night-in, night-out basis.
That's a great point. I think for Miami, yeah, and I'm with you, like, the whole championship or nothing discussion that we get, that here's the thing, the championship or nothing discussion that we give teams, that's BS. The championship or nothing mantra that the Heat give themselves, I'm going to hold you to that.
Yeah.
If you're going to tell me that you are so great of an organization that we are the hardest working, best conditioned, blah, 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 and you're branding yourself as that, then cool. I'm going to hold you to that and say, is Kevin Durant at 37 years old and you're putting all this, like, you're putting all this pressure on Kevin Durant to be the guy, not just leader guy, but he's going to be the focal point of defenses every single night. Like, I'm not saying that he can't be that at his age. But I am simply saying, because he's the most efficient scorer I think we've ever seen in this league. But there's a benefit of playing with Devin Booker, right? There's a benefit of having the defense sort of shift to you in that way. I don't want to put that load on Kevin Durant.
No.
To have to be my best player 82 nights out of the year,
right,
given all the attrition that his body is going through.
That's why what I would say is, like, no team right now is one move away. Singularly in a vacuum, right? You've got to do more around that. Again, going back to what I was saying about Orlando, like, you've made Paolo and Franz, your two cornerstones, better by adding Desmond Bane. Kevin Durant alone coming to Miami is nothing. Like, maybe it gets you a few wins in the regular season, but what did it get Brooklyn? What did it get Phoenix, right? You've got to build within and add around the edges. Bam Adebayo has to be better than he was. Tyler Hero has to, as good as he was, has to take a step forward. They've got to develop some more of these younger guys. Khalil Ware, he's, you know, if he's still on the team, based on who they have to give up to get a guy like a Kevin Durant or whatever. Like, these guys have to take the next step. You cannot, as you mentioned, ask a 37-year-old Kevin Durant to just come in and all of a sudden make you a championship contender. But to the point that we're both making about incrementally better, yeah, like, you need to take a step forward and then add other things. And then as you go along throughout the summer, throughout the regular season, into the trade deadline, give yourself the ability to even make yourself even better, because you don't know what the East is going to look like. You don't know what is going to happen.
No, I think the East is going to be really fascinating, Jared. I think the draft coming up, which is going to be, if there's a game seven, a whole whopping 2 days after the afterglow of a potential game seven, which means we're all going to be tired as hell going into New York City for the draft. It's going to be interesting because you're going to see so much draft capital moved around for some of these trades, or at least trades agreed to in principle by the time the new league year happens and some of the restrictions are being released and everything else because the cap goes up and blah, blah, blah. Like, draft night is going to be really interesting.
Well, can I just get something off my chest really quick?
By all means.
This is a big thing. I've been harping on this for years. I have people in the league office that have agreed with me, but they claim there's nothing they can do, which I think is bogus. This draft night, it's going to all come to a head this year. And I can't believe it hasn't happened already. What the NBA continues to do because of the league calendar year and when trades are allowed to go through, the draft has become at times an event that you can only watch on social media. You watch it on TV, you're seeing the commissioner make announcements of certain players being traded. The player puts a hat on his head. It's the wrong hat. And this year, we are all anticipating, based on everyone is talking to, that more draft picks than ever are going to be moved, or more trades are going to happen. And Commissioner Silver is only going to be able to announce one or two of them because of which trade qualifies under the league rule, league year, whatever it is. It's overly complicated. Listen, the NFL does it. The NFL draft is so highly rated and attended. They do it. Why can't the NBA adjust? Adam Silver should be able to walk up there every time and announce the correct pick with the correct player going to the correct team. Make this a consumable event that people will enjoy watching, not making it confusing where you have to go to a second screen on social media to find out from newsbreakers where the player is actually landing. Make it an event we want to consume. And it'll be even more fun with all the trades. Just make your TV partner able to explain it properly. Please.
Jared Greenberg, ladies and gentlemen. Hand claps and finger snaps for my man Jared Greenberg.
I feel better.
Gospel. Jared, I'm just glad you got it out, my dog. I appreciate it, man.
The NBA's got such a great product. Just make it something that we can all understand and consume without going to a second or third source. Like, every draft for the last several years, I wake up the next morning saying, I thought this kid was going to this team, but no, three teams later, he ends up somewhere else. Like, holy cow, get the lawyers together in a room and figure out how to make it happen.
Well, I know one thing that Dakota London is going to be clipping off of social media on draft week next week. No, because I agree with you. I completely agree with you. I think if it's a made-for-TV event, let's make it a realistic made-for-TV event. And if you're putting the draft over the course of 2 days, you're doing this because you want to maximize the eyeballs. Let the eyeballs actually know what's going on, as opposed to making them, you know, do everything, like, make it so that they don't have to go find themselves.
Right.
Make it so that you can go deliver the information to them in real time, even if the trade isn't necessarily consummated completely. Make it so, hey, put on the hat, this is what you're doing, this is where you're going, and that everybody can know that there's clarity. I'm 100% with you, Jared Greenberg.
Like, well, if you're the NBA, why do you make such a big deal of inviting players to the green room, having them come up and give the hug to Commissioner Silver, and then putting on a hat that he's never going to wear? And then we go back and, like, show draft night photos of these guys, and they're in the wrong hat. Like, it's so dumb. If the trade has been agreed to by the two teams, announce it.
Anything else, Jared?
No, I'm good. Feel good, thanks.
Jared Greenberg, ladies and gentlemen, that's TNT Sports, and of course, NBA TV. One of my good friends, Jared, really appreciate you. See you in Indy for Game 6, brother.
Be out there on the pregame show, 6:30 Eastern on NBA TV. Maybe 7. Actually, I think 7 o'clock Eastern.
Yeah, because you know how Rick Carlisle likes to do the, you know, close the ball, close lower
you
balls.
You said it, not me. Else. I didn't say that.
I said it. It's all good. It's all good. Because you can see me on NBA TV, too, a little bit earlier than that. Check me out in my suits. Thanks to Jared Greenberg for joining me on today's show. Thanks to the producer, Dakota, and the entire team that worked so hard behind the scenes on this show. I'll be back later on this week for the next episode of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.